It's the network break. Brew a coffee and spin up a virtual donut and join us for this Packet Pushers podcast on the latest news from the tech industry with analysis, opinion, insight, and the occasional rant. I'm your host, Drew Connery Murray, and with me is the incomparable Greg Farrow. Greg, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Very, very fine. What a great week in networking news.
Oh, we've got so much to cover. So much. Yes, it's been kind of quiet, but now we've got a ton to dig into. So let's do that. But before we do, I want to thank our sponsor, Interop. Interop takes place May 2nd through the 6th in Las Vegas. And the Packet Pushers are holding a two-day Future of Networking Summit at the show. We'll tell you about it a little bit later. First, the news. This was a busy, busy week for Cisco. They had a partner summit and they just dumped a ton of stuff on us. And a little note to the executive team at Cisco, we here at Network Break would appreciate if you just spread these product releases out a little bit, maybe a couple per quarter, because that gives us more to talk about.
It's really, really inconsiderate of them, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah.
It's like they don't care about us or something.
I'm hurt a little bit, frankly.
It's just not fair. Here's a question for you, right? We're going to go through a whole bunch of like really substantial announcements that Cisco's made. Some of them are really, really quite shaking to the foundations of the company that we know. They've announced all of them at the partner conference in the US.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, 2 weeks ago, they were at the customer conference in Berlin, the Cisco Live in Europe, one of the biggest networking events in the calendar, and they didn't announce a single new product there.
Are you feeling a little Euro neglected?
I think what I'm a bit sort of whiny, sort of bitchy whiny about is like, who's the customer here, right? If you bring all of your customers, like the people who buy this product from resellers, remember that most customers don't buy it from Cisco, they buy it from resellers,
mm-hmm.
and they're all there ready to be, you know, learning about your product and, you know, ready for some excitement and some stimulation. And then what they do is they go and give all the good stuff to the partner conference. Who's the customer here, right? Is it the customer or is the reseller who buys the products from Cisco? Or is it, you know, like this emphasis is curious to me as to what it is. I mean, you know, I've been fairly critical about Cisco's relationships with its partners over the last few years, pointing out that, you know, diminishing profit margins and things like that have been coming on.
Squeezing their partners, yeah.
Yeah. And one of the big things I saw, I've been following it on Twitter. You can go out onto Twitter and type hashtag Cisco PS Partner Summit, and you can see all of these things. And one of, right down on the first day, so you'll have to scroll back a fair bit, you'll see all of these slides saying Cisco is committed to partner profitability. This went on for most of a day. And they made a substantial push in the keynote, the very first keynote on the very first day, around we are committed to partner profitability. Now, of course, they say that every year to some extent, but I get the sense that Cisco's actually like, oh, we've screwed the resellers as far as possible.
Now they're trying to kiss and make up a little bit, maybe.
Wow, you know, the things are changing, right? And we'll talk about this in a minute. Cisco relies on resellers to get to market because they're an incredibly cheap sales force.
Right.
Compared to hiring a sales force, covering the ground, and then invoicing customers and collecting debts from customers and, you know, the amount of support that you have to do to sell products to a wide range of customers, that is just a phenomenal cost.
Yeah, so you outsource that to resellers.
Yeah, effectively that's what they've done, right?
Yeah.
And then the resellers get to take some margin in the process, and that's more efficient than Cisco trying to do that. Now, I would argue that some of what we're going to talk about, the hyperconverged stuff, will eventually displace resellers completely because it'll take away, you know, the value is that while systems are complex, while systems are labyrinthine and licensing requires 6 months training to work out what license needs to be done and constant retraining as new licensing schemes come on board.
There's the value out of the reseller because they come in and help you navigate mm-hmm. all that and help you link all this stuff together. But if you've got a hyperconverged system, what's there for a reseller to do?
Yeah, that's right. You just go and buy another one. You've only got.
So what you're saying is that Cisco is saying we love resellers, but their product releases aren't necessarily saying that.
So if you look at what Amazon did to the online, to sales of products, to local supermarkets, to local shopping, you know, small shops, small outlets,
mm-hmm.
it took away a substantial percentage of the business that those companies once enjoyed. A lot of it was the high profit margin, low effort business. And that's what resellers are reliant on today, is that low effort margin but good margin business that they get just by being Cisco partners. If that margin goes away through things like hyperconverged plays with simplified selling processes, you could just go and buy it from Amazon. Why are you doing business with Cisco at all?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like with a reseller. So
right. There's,
you know, everybody, the middleman is always disrupted by the internet. And yet the one thing that's never been disrupted by the internet is IT sales.
Well, let's go through some of these announcements and we'll see what we come up with at the end for this this theory of yours.
Sure.
So the big one, of course, is HyperFlex, the UCS system, hyperconverged system. It's built on UCS for compute and storage. It's got UCS Fabric interconnects for networking, UCS Manager for management, and then they throw in ESXi for the hypervisor and storage software from SpringPath. SpringPath is not a company that I had heard of prior to this.
No, nobody's heard of it prior to this. It's very odd. I mean, so Cisco talks about HyperFlex, and at not at any point does it mention SpringPath, which is actually the company that's providing the hyperconverged platform. In the same way that you go and buy a Nutanix, you're buying a Nutanix storage engine and the orchestration engine. What I mean by orchestration is the thing that orchestrates the network configuration and the VM configuration and the image deployment and the storage management and, you know, all that stuff. So there's really two things in a hyperconverged system is the piece that does the distributed storage part, because you don't want to use a storage array because they're too expensive and too complicated. So you just use commoditized x86 servers. And then you have an orchestration system that brings it all together so you can say, give me one VM or add in another chassis into the system and all of a sudden there's more capacity and does all that. SpringPath is the company that did the orchestration system and the storage engine. You could argue that their storage is better than vSAN or worse than vSAN. I believe there's some architectural differences and no doubt there's people out there debating the, splitting hairs and crossing T's and dotting I's and doing grammar checks on all that sort of stuff. So go and talk to them about whether the SpringPath storage engine is true or not. But Cisco hasn't announced that it acquired SpringPath.
No, this is just a partnership.
So it seems. But SpringPath disappeared from scene in November 2015, like has never been a substantial player, never really sort of showed up on anybody's radar as a serious hyperconverged player. It disappeared completely in November 2015, and we all thought, exit stage left, startup didn't make it, runway's disappearing, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then lo and behold, it turns into Cisco HyperFlex. It is a partner, but it's not actually been bought. But not mentioned in anywhere in Cisco's documentation.
Yeah, that's curious.
It is. So my guess is that Cisco's got some sort of exclusive distribution agreements with, Nutanix. Simplivity got a blog post out the week before last saying, we've got over 1,000 deployments on UCS, hundreds of customers and thousands of deployments, over 1,000 deployments. Of course, Nutanix runs on top of UCS, but then, they moved away from making their own hardware to embracing UCS and Dell's hardware. And of course, now that Dell and Cisco have their own hyperconverged solutions, so, Dell obviously is going to do something with vBlock and where are you going to go, right? It's very confusing.
Yeah, very confusing. And just to add more confusion, apparently HP is making noise about getting into this game as well.
Oh, so that's the big surprise. I was, thinking to myself, I wonder where HP is with all of this.
Sorry, we should say HPE.
HPE. Where is HPE? I mean, they're the company with, they've got storage, they've got servers, they've got software, they've got the global distribution network. Why aren't we seeing something from him?
They've got networking, yeah.
Yeah, and in yesterday's financial announcements, lo and behold, Meg Whitman was saying, now this is not enough product launch, by the way, that's coming later this month. She says, we will announce a new market-changing hyperconverged offering based on our industry-leading ProLiant virtualization server, and all at 20% lower cost than Nutanix. Hmm. Wow, there you go. So I hadn't heard anything about that. I don't believe it's a leak, but hey, there you go.
All right, well, some more riling in the market. We'll keep an eye on that, but let's carry on with what else Cisco is up to. Another big announcement is that they're announced an acquisition of a company called Qlikr, and Qlikr, I guess, does cloud orchestration software so that you can sort of model your application, and then this Qlikr system supposedly allows you to run it across multiple cloud platforms, whether public or private.
So Qlikr is, to my mind, is an extension to ACI. So ACI has always been on-premises data centers, you'll orchestrate your networking layer and also your NFV. So there'll be more about NFV a little bit later in the announcement sequence, but ACI is able to orchestrate the network on-prem. And they've always wanted ACI to be like much bigger than just on-premise. It should be able to take over UCS. It should be able to take over campus. It should be, everything should be under the ACI banner. But of course, inside of Cisco, every business unit competes with every other. And so you've got the other business units producing competitive products to ACI. So customers need to decide which piece of Cisco they want to buy. Rather than buying an SDN solution from Cisco, you have to choose which one you want to buy, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Qlikr is the acquisition for the ACI in CEMI BU that snaps in top of ACI so that you can be using ACI networking that we've known about for the last couple of years on-prem to orchestrate your network. And it will now also do the VM ES style, DevOps style orchestration, either on-prem or off-prem. And that is effectively then a hybrid cloud strategy.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Cisco obviously doesn't want customers going to the cloud because they can't sell them equipment. But this play gives them sort of a bridge where they can say, okay, if you have to go to the cloud, at least consider our software to help you get there.
Yes. So ACI is, you know, if you look at Clickr's website, they talk about we can work with Windows Azure, AWS, HP Helion, which is the private OpenStack, OpenStack, Red Hat's OpenStack, VMware's vSphere, and Google Cloud. And, you know, the list is, you know, 19 things long. So now what you've got is this software acquisition that'll come in to ACI. And apparently Clickr and ACI have been cooperating today, but this is now owned by Insieme. So that business unit can now scale up to be a multi-cloud architecture mm-hmm. is the pitch. So Cisco, rather than call it hybrid cloud, because that's what everybody else calls it, they've always got to rename it
they
something
do,
else.
Don't they?
They do.
I'm surprised they didn't try to call hyperconverged something else.
Yeah, I think they would have tried, but they're a bit late to the hyperconverged market, so they have to roll up, you know, stick with it. So this will be the natural thing for a multi-cloud architecture. You'll see Cisco talked about it extensively at the partner announcement. They want to embrace everywhere that the customer is going to be and make sure that they're getting inside your wallet and there to offer you solutions and, you know, and so forth. And then that's what this is. It's that multi-cloud stretch across private and public and the myth that is hybrid cloud.
So sticking with the news, Cisco announced another acquisition. This is Leaba Semiconductor. It's a semiconductor manufacturer coming out of Israel.
It's not a manufacturer. That's a common mistake. Thank you for saying that. I should have put you up to it. But
like a well-oiled machine.
And when it comes to designing semiconductors or building semiconductors, there's two things that happen. One is the design of and one is the manufacture of.
Got it.
There are many companies out there who design the silicon, and there's very few companies who only manufacture it. Like it takes $5 billion to make a factory
plant, yeah.
To make a fab. So the companies who do that only run the companies. They don't do the design. So other people out there design it, and then they take it to the manufacturing plant to be actually made. So Leaba is an Israeli company, depending on where the correct pronunciation is, Israeli. Everybody else says Israeli, is a fabless chip designer, as they say, that has been acquired by Cisco to give them a next generation of silicon. Couple of things that it could be, and I talk a little bit about this in the Human Infrastructure Magazine newsletter, which you should totally sign up for. It's probable that in my mind, there's two things it could be. One is that they've got a silicon design which does a thing called a flexible pipeline. What I mean by that is a normal ASIC today is designed to do step, 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 step. So it's like layer 2 switching, layer 3 routing, layer 4 lookups, TCAMs, you know, to drop move. And then you have like another step where you apply QoS markers to it or rewrite the packet at any point. And then you have some memory in for the output buffers. And that pipeline is fixed. You can't change it. You can't, you know, bring something in at the layer 3 and then feed it down to the layer 2. And then, you know, that's fixed. And that is the only way we've been able to design silicon up until now. Potentially this company has a chip that's got a flexible pipeline. Cavium was a step in that direction with they bought the XPliant company, uh-huh. Similar sorts of things.
So by flexible, you mean that I don't have to follow a predetermined step. I can go in and out of whatever functions I need.
So the operating system on the switch could choose to program the forwarding process any way they see fit. Mm-hmm. Right. So the classic example that it is today is that when you receive an overlay packet, say a VXLAN or a Geneva, you receive the packet in your switch and you strip the layer 2 header off, then you strip the layer 3 header off, and now you've got the original source packet. Uh-huh. But you've already been through the layer 2 and layer 3 part of the silicon, so now all you can do is push it back out. Like you can't do anything else. You can't now re-encapsulate it back into a overlay because you've already passed through the layer 2 engine. That's the sort of thing we're trying to get away. If you're in a big network doing hierarchical QoS, you might want to rewrite the QoS tag several times as it passes through the engine. Or you might want to have arbitrary actions on that where you have multiple forwarding paths through the chip. It's all very complicated. I don't think I can do it justice verbally. Just believe me, flexible pipelines is a very desirable thing, and there's a lot of companies working on it. The other thing it could be, because that's just speculation, right? So I can speculate and make stuff up here. The other one is we've been talking before about optical networking, and the rise of optical network and how it's going to replace IP switched or IP MPLS backbones, which route IP packets, mm-hmm. because you can't make terabit routers. We need to start looking at optical. And it's possible the Arbor might have something that does like native optical on the switch that allows us to start putting optical in the service provider market. I'm not sure. It was a private acquisition. There's no public information. The Arbor website has no secrets. I can't find any rumors about what they do. So that's my two guesses, something optical and something flexible.
Optical and flexible. It sounds like a musical.
Now, those are exclusive, by the way. You probably can't do both, but anyway.
Okay. Well, this is also something we will have to keep an eye on. Mm. Yet another announcement from Cisco, the Cisco Digital Network Architecture. I'm still trying to wrap my head around just what the heck this is. It's not a product. It's more of like a marketing package or something.
It is hard to get through this, and I don't feel like I've had enough time, but let me give you a guess and put some caveats on this that I'm trying to be this is what I'm trying to get out of here. But effectively, it's digital network architecture is network functions virtualization for the enterprise, to my mind, right? Mm-hmm. What that means is it's about doing – the first step is virtual appliances, so virtual firewalls, virtual load balancers, virtual routers, virtual everything. So instead of buying physical hardware, you're going to start – buying virtual functions to run in the enterprise. The second part of an NFV infrastructure is it's not just enough to turn the devices into what's normally called VNFs, virtual network functions, when you softwareize them. Do you like that, softwareize? What you also need now is once everything's in software, you now to software define them. And that means provisioning engines, speed of provisioning. You need modeling engines, real-time logging, real-time analysis, historical. You need decision support systems, operational support, orchestration, automation engines, all that sort of stuff. In a physical world, when you pick up the switch and you rack it, your provisioning process can never be automated, really. Mm-hmm. It's always down to that. When all of a sudden you start to softwareize it, you don't know where it's going to be in the infrastructure. There's a whole bunch of variables that you suddenly don't have. And so now you need all of this software to monitor the software, but at the same time, you're getting new business value because all of a sudden the software that's monitoring and operating the VNF or the virtualized platform is going to give you analytics. How hard is it running? How much data? How many rules are being hammered? You know, mm-hmm. that sort of stuff.
Right.
So, and the idea is that this effectively is Cisco embracing the software future for the enterprise. Up until now, sort of some of the commentary I've seen is that, you know, Cisco's been very slow to go to software, although it's had lots of headline projects to do a bit of software. You know, ACI will SDN the data center, or we'll have virtual routers, kind of. We're not really serious about it, but we'll produce some so that you shut up and stop whining. This is a full-on enterprise network functions virtualization commitment to do that, not just give it lip service and pretend it doesn't exist and hope that customers keep buying the stuff. This is, we are now fully into software. We are now digital networking. The whole days of physical networking are now behind us, is what we're seeing.
Yeah, and it's interesting to read some of the bullet points that came along with this announcement. So one of them is closed and hardware-centric models are giving way to open, programmable, and software-centric ones, and manual, repetitive, command line, interface-driven management is being largely superseded by policy-based automation. And other bullet points that very much could have come out of a VMware NSX, you know, marketing sheet.
Yes. Yes, perfect. Absolutely. That's exactly right. It's Cisco admitting in some ways or bringing out a strategy that matches where the rest of the market has gone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I've been saying for some time, Cisco needs to protect its profits in its existing businesses. It can't go running off to the next big thing before customers are quite ready for it because it might be foregoing profits in its legacy markets.
Absolutely.
And that would make its shareholders unhappy. Okay.
Yes.
But at the same time, I think...
Yeah,
we're now seeing the point where the momentum behind virtualized network devices, software-defined networking, this whole orchestration automation, and it's going to take over everything, not just – and, you know, you're not going to rush out and go and buy a digital network architecture today. It's going to be like any one of the other network architectures that Cisco's produced over the years. There's these white papers that take all the Lego blocks that Cisco's dropped and drops them into this into a model that's supposed to work together.
Now, it's interesting that on the same website page or blog page as this digital network, the DNA announcement, there's also a message about a financing option that's attached to this program, which while they're talking about everything becoming software, they are still recognizing they've got to sell hardware. So Cisco apparently is launching this scheme where you can pay 90% of the cost over a 3-year loan term with 0% interest so that you get, you know, predictable monthly payments and cash flow. And then at the end of that 3-year period, you can either keep the gear, return it and refresh it, or purchase the assets for 10% of the original purchase price. So even as they're talking about software and transformation, they're also saying, and here's a little taste, you know, a little something to help keep you interested in buying our hardware. So it does seem like they're talking out of both sides of their mouth.
Not quite, not quite. There is a part of Cisco that a lot of people don't know about called Cisco Capital or Cisco Financing. It's Cisco Capital Financing. I'm not sure exactly what it's called. It seems to move around a little bit depending on who you're talking to. Mm-hmm. And that is Cisco acting as a finance company. So effectively,
yeah,
what Cisco is doing there is taking its profits and then writing some of those profits off in a finance division. So they sell you the finance to buy Cisco's products. This is a very old idea. So that business unit has been around for 20 years.
That's how a lot of auto companies sell cars here in the United States. You can finance it through the car company itself.
It used to be called hire purchase. You buy a car, and at the end of 5 years or 3 years, you pay out a bulk payment at the end, which is 10, 20, 30% of the price that you paid after paying 3 or 5 years of payments. A lot of enterprises used to use it as a way of forcing assets out of the data center. So we used to buy stuff on those finance deals, and at the end of 3 years, we always went back and ripped them back out. So it guaranteed the rotation.
Right.
Getting into this idea of compostable, discardable architectures or products. And then, of course, networking completely paused, and it wasn't worth, you know, there was no innovation happening in terms of speed or products for a long, long time. And so companies stopped buying things on finance because there was no point in rotating them. And then, of course, the vendors realized how much money there was to be made out of service contracts because you don't have to do anything with the products been sitting in a rack rotting away for a decade. It's all free gravy. So that's what they've been making their money out of. But that's going away as people are saying, I don't need maintenance contracts anymore. Mm-hmm. Or if I go to software defined, I don't get the hardware maintenance money anymore. And I've got to try and get that back somehow.
Right.
Right. So Cisco Finance, there was a big push around it at the partner summit. The tweets coming out saying Cisco Finance, customers who buy Cisco Finance buy more and you make more money. You know, for resellers, it's great because it takes the potentially can take away, oh, it's OPEX, not CAPEX, because when you sell something under Cisco Finance, it's OPEX, not CAPEX.
Right.
But you've got to also have a deal that's worth Cisco Finance engaging with, which is usually at $1 million+.
Sure.
Sorry.
Yeah. Not worth the time to sell you one switch through this program.
No, you're not going to buy a $3,000 switch on hire purchase.
No.
You need to have a significant deal, and you need to be a big enough company to get on their radar. So don't get too excited about that. That's just a finance arm. Your company's probably got its own financing things. And every time I've tried to engage with my customers on Cisco Finance as a way of changing the way that the IT department operated, the accounting people just said, A, we've got our own supplier for finance. Why would we deal with this one? And secondly, why would we finance this? We've got the money anyway. So they, you know, just never seemed to go anywhere. So, and I stopped bothering after a while. But, you know, maybe the world's different now.
Well, Cisco's not the only one who has this. I know Brocade has a financing arm, and there must be other big vendors that do this. But moving on, this is the last Cisco announcement we'll talk about for this episode, I promise. The Cisco Supervisor 6T.
Oh, yes. So for those of you whose data center is more like a museum and not so much a center for technological excellence, that is if you've been using the CAT 6000 platform like forever, and for which I feel very sorry for you. So the Syscatalyst 6800 has got a new, yet another supervisor engine, the 6T. It's bigger, better, faster, et cetera, et cetera. You might not have heard about it in all the noise, so I wanted to highlight it here just in case you didn't know. It's just basically the old supervisor. Let's see. Since the supervisor 3, all it does is get faster and bigger. Mm-hmm. And so this one is exactly that.
All right, all you Catalyst fans.
No, if you're a Cat 6800, if you've got that millstone hanging around your neck, you probably don't really – yeah. It's not a great product. But if you got one, and a lot of people love them, I was talking to a Cisco product manager about it, and he said they've got commitments to sell the product for the next 20 or 30 years. So that's unlikely that the product will disappear. Yeah. People are buying them like museum pieces, I think.
Yeah, I guess they aren't right for the DNA section here.
No, not. But, you know, some people have a specific need. My understanding is there's things like navies who have these and they're part of the design of the boat.
Well, I guess that would be hard to rip and replace then, yes.
Well, they just can't be bothered. And they'd much rather give money to the vendor to keep the product on life support.
Sure, and if you've got nuclear missiles on that boat, then the switching infrastructure is probably the least of your worries.
Exactly right, all that sort of stuff. So I did just want to mention that. So congratulations to Cisco overall. Great set of announcements. There's lots of really good things. The hyperconverged, the focusing back on partners and trying to give them a reason to stick with Cisco and partner with Cisco instead of turning away by focusing on profitability. There was also some supporting announcements there about some new digital marketing initiatives. What that means is Cisco's building cloud platforms that allow resellers to reach out to customers over the internet instead of doing mail shots and, like, you know, stuff that we used to do in the 1990s. Cisco partners with resellers to give them money to do marketing, joint marketing efforts, and they're moving into a digital marketing initiative, which is great. We could start to see some more modern sort of marketing emerging. Obviously, there's the ACI growing their product family, which is great for people who are into that, especially if you want to be on multiple clouds. Not too sure about where InterCloud sits in that, but I guess they'll put it into the development cycle in the months ahead. And then also acquiring Libra Semiconductor. And also one thing that I didn't put onto the list here, Drew, but I'll tell you now, is that a little blog post sneaked out from Cisco in the middle of all the noise, tweaking Arista's nose.
Just a little ha-ha.
Yeah. The judge released some of the paperwork, and it basically there was a blog post gloating about the fact that Cisco had some fun. Have a look in there in the show notes. I'll drop a link in there so that you can read about it if you're interested in that.
All right. Well, let's take a minute to talk about our sponsor for today, Interop. Interop is the leading independent IT conference, and the Packet Pushers are putting together a two-day Future of Networking Summit for Interop Las Vegas 2016. So what we're going to do with the summit is bring in some experts, some practitioners. We're going to talk about where networking is going, not what it is now. It's going to be a great opportunity to sort of have your mind blown about the changes that are coming. And Greg, you and Ethan are going to be there also doing some presentations.
We sure are. So the whole idea about the future of networking is to talk about visions of the future. We have a bunch of special guests, hand-selected, coming in to talk to you about the long-term future of networking, not about what's happening today, not about what you're going to buy in the next fortnight or two, about what does it look like 3 to 5 years out. I mean, imagine what a hyper-converged infrastructure is going to look like when every hyper-converged platform comes with switches built in. So when you buy a HyperFlex, the fabric interconnect, which is the networking, is built into it. So what does your network look like in 5 to 10 years when everything's a hyper-converged system in the data center? And that's the sort of topics we want to address. We'd love to get you to come along and join us. And we're also going to be having some social events with the pushers. We're going to be having some time in bars, and you'll be able to meet a lot of other nerds just like you.
It's a great time. And besides the Future Networking Summit, Interop has a full slate of independent and top-notch content on security, virtualization, IT leadership, SDN, a whole lot more. So it's really a useful way to spend your time.
Sure is. You can spend 2 days with us, and then you can spend 3 days with the wider conference, the independent tracks in the conference.
Run wild and free. And if you use the code PPushers when you register, that's PPushers, you can get 25% off 5-day, 3-day, and 2-day conference passes, including the Future of Networking Summit. So we hope to see you there. And let's get back to the news. This story popped out at me. I guess VMware using NSX and vMotion actually did a cross-continental virtual migration from one continent to another. They sent a compute and storage workload from Sydney, Australia to Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting because, you know, reading Ivan Pepelniak's blog a lot, he hates this kind of stretch layer 2 domain thing, and here they are doubling down.
There's an RFC 1925, I think it's Rule 5, says pigs fly just fine with enough thrust applied. But and that's it can be dangerous to be underneath them, and you're never quite sure where they'll land. And so the point here is that even if you're going to vMotion from that sort of distance, that's true. Anybody can do that, especially for a tiny, tiny VM. To use this in real-world applications is often vastly different. The second thing is, and Ivan's point is, when a layer two domain blows up, it takes everything with it.
right.
quite often a data center. So now what you've done by linking two data centers together with a layer two domain is if the layer two domain hits a failure mode, which it will, I can guarantee it, you can take down both data centers at the same time. So congratulations, you've just taken down the data center in Sydney and Texas. And that's what we call blast radius. When you consider implementing these technologies, think about the blast radius when a failure happens and how big the blast and what is the collateral damage when they go down. So not a brilliant idea. Now, the second thing is that at that sort of latency, you're talking something like 120 milliseconds, your data synchronization rate, doesn't matter how much bandwidth you have, latency is the killer here, mm-hmm. probably means it's a tiny 1 gig VM.
Yes.
That's not exactly real world because a useful VM, to be able to vMotion it, there's just so much pain inside it. You know, is a 20 gig or a 30 gig VM and synchronizing that much data so that you can transfer control between the two, that could take hours and assumes that the system's not under heavy load.
Right.
So this isn't new. This has been done before. Plenty of people have done it. They do it in private clouds and nobody talks about them. I've spoken to plenty of people who've done this over that sort of distance and go, yeah, but then we tried to do a real thing and it didn't work. So whatever.
Sure, but we'll have a link to it if you want to go watch the video of them actually doing it.
It's probably about as exciting as being slapped with a salmon.
It depends on the size of the salmon.
Yeah.
sticking with VMware, some more executives departing the organization.
Yeah, this really has continued on. We talked last week about Martin Casado leaving. There's been a rather continuous stream of them. This week has seen an entire executive shakeup. And the headline act there is that Carl Eschenbacher, who's the VMware's chief operating officer, has resigned to pursue a new career opportunity, which means one of two things, either stuff you, I'm out of here, or we don't need you anymore, get out of here.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like when a politician says they've decided to spend more time with their family.
Yes, it's nowhere in between. It's normally one of the two. So there was a whole bunch of other announcements, of course. The chief financial officer headed out the door a while ago, and EMC started to put some of their staff in positions. The chances are that EMC is positioning itself to merge with Dell, and it's clearing the decks ahead of that process, trying to get rid of some costs and some headcount ahead of the moves.
Mm-hmm. Okay, some house cleaning at VMware.
Well, and the share price is taking a hit because everybody says that VMware is as big as it's ever going to be. Mm-hmm. There's no more revenue for it to go and get. And it doesn't seem to have any new products. Obviously, the NSX is the growing market, but it's still not very large. And if virtualization is a saturated market, and of course, VMware's been growing at a massive rate, it hasn't got the hyperconverged systems off the ground, blah, blah, blah. So now's the time to reorganize the company from a high growth, high cost to a low cost, low growth.
Moderate growth, yes.
Moderate, yeah. Well, whatever it is. Maybe that's what's happening. Maybe it's.
Yeah. All right. And this is an article that you pulled out. IBM is suing Groupon over some patents.
Yeah, this is interesting. Not because IBM's suing anybody, because, who cares about Groupon? But I think, we've seen IBM have some bad times recently, and financially it's in deep doo as it's shrinking. And, Ginni Rometty, who's the CEO of IBM, has finally walked away from the financial commitment she's given to the financial markets about how much money it's going to come up with, et cetera, et cetera. And if IBM is going to start leveraging its patent portfolio, which is huge,
enormous,
as a way of generating revenue, then that's a whole new play in the market.
That's bad news for a lot of people, a lot of people.
Yeah, and especially startups, because IBM owns a lot of patents that startups might otherwise run afoul of. And if they start litigating heavily to make as a profit center, you know what I mean? Like you go and sue people for money or you
Yeah, well, I mean, IBM could become easily the world's biggest patent troll. I mean, think some stats from the story. Last year alone, IBM acquired 7,355 patents in 1 year. Okay, so that's like essentially IBM is saying, yes, we came up with 20 novel ideas every single day of the year, ran out and got them patented. That's for one, that tells me that the patent system is deeply broken. For another, IBM has a massive war chest of patents. And I can't imagine, frankly, any organization that IBM couldn't walk up to and say, hey, that thing you're doing, we patented that back in the 1990s mm-hmm. or in 2000 or whatever, and here's the bill.
yeah, you need to give us a share of your revenue because we own the patents on that.
Right.
So I've heard stories in these companies that every, you know, twice a year you have a meeting with the lawyers to talk to them about, or even quarterly, you have a meeting with intellectual property lawyers to tell them about what you're working about. And the intellectual property lawyers goes, nope, we can patent that.
I'm sure.
And then they go away for a couple of months. And then all of a sudden they come back and go, congratulations, we're applying for a patent for this idea. Or no, we found out somebody had already patented it or whatever it was. And it's literally just part of your quarterly review to see if you can make a patent out of whatever it is you're working on.
Right. And the thing is with IBM, they can, you know, walk up to a Cisco or an HPE and say, hey, you've got some patents, we've got some patents, let's agree not to go after each other. But a Groupon or a Twitter or some other startup, they're not going to have anything. And IBM can essentially, you know, show up with a truck full of lawyers and go, ding, ding, ding.
Yes. Which is a shame, because instead of seeing, you know, focusing on products and services and keeping the market moving along. I don't want to use the word innovating, because big companies rarely innovate. Other people do the innovation.
That's what's frustrating. patents are supposed to protect innovation and offer opportunity for innovation, but the system, the way it's set up, IBM can exploit it to essentially, you know,
yes,
squelch innovation.
Which is exactly the point about why that's here. I wanted to bring up is the Cisco versus Arista thing. Cisco's framing it as protecting innovation, in that Cisco's developed something 20 years ago, and now they're calling it, it's their right to protect their innovation of the command line interface of all things. Right. Or the SysDB, which is like the most obvious way to design an architecture ever. And, you know, if we start to see networking companies or big IT companies go on the front foot with patent lawyering as a way of, you know, keeping the revenues going instead of new products or innovations, then our industry is going to stagnate. It's going to be bad for us.
Yeah. And one last note on this, just so the IBM knows that this works, because in 2013, this is also coming from Ars Technica, it got $36 million from Twitter over some patent disputes. And I guess Twitter actually bought 900 patents outright with $36 million from IBM.
These things happen all the time. Yeah, no, these things aren't new. They happen all the time.
Right.
There's been like $4 billion patent portfolios put together where all the companies who own patents agree to put them all into a portfolio, and then the portfolio goes and runs around and gets its $4 billion worth of patents back by suing other people. You know, Apple, Nortel, Microsoft, Cisco, IBM have all put portfolios together in the past, and it happens all the time. But if these companies start using this as a revenue stream to prop up their results as they fail, then we're going to have a problem.
Yeah, that's a problem. All right, we'll leave that there for now. Let's move on to HP. They announced some good results.
Yes, they got announced their results this month, this week, to the market. I read the review of the investors call. Basically, they announced good profits, but more importantly, they predicted a strong quarter ahead. So we've talked in previous weeks about, you know, Cisco indicated very slight drops in the quarter ahead. Some of the startups indicated 10 to 20% drops in the months ahead, and then promptly their share price fell by 30 or 40%. HPE, a bit surprisingly, said, no, it's all good and we're growing again. And so the share price probably popped by 5 to 10% as everybody piled into the stock because there's still money there. Two things out of it. One is that they announced that they're going to be doing a hyperconverged strategy. I touched on that earlier. I haven't seen any discussion of that before, but Meg Whitman said that we'll refresh our server portfolio. Looking forward, you can expect momentum and investment. Later this month, we will announce new market-changing hyperconverged offering based on our ProLiant virtualization servers. Our new solution will offer customers installation in minutes, a consumer-inspired, simple mobile array user experience, and automated IT operations, all at 20% lower cost than Nutanix. Bad day for Nutanix and the other converged players, because if HP and Cisco have their own HCI solutions, those guys could be left out on the fringes. Mm-hmm. But the other part that I thought was very interesting was also later this month, we'll refresh our server portfolio to include a game-changing new technology called persistent memory, which was invented by our server group. Persistent memory. What is that, Drew? What is that?
You've got me. I have no idea what that is.
So I sat and thought about it, and then I realized that's what Intel's doing with 3D XPoint. So a couple of months ago, I did a recording with Stephen Foskett, and he talked about how Intel's 3D RAM, 3D NAND technology is going to probably result in a technology. It's like I thought of it as disk drives. So You have DRAMs, which runs at 100 nanoseconds, and then you have SSDs, which run at thousands of nanoseconds. And in the middle was going to be this 3D XPoint memory that Intel's brought to market. But Stephen Foskett was saying that he believes it's going to be used as a persistent RAM. So instead of having DRAM, which you load up to and then you write it back to the permanent storage, if you've got fast enough storage architectures, why don't you just run everything from the 3D XPoint? So my guess is you're going to see HP announce that it's got a 3D NAND solution, and you can now start running, instead of having DRAM, or you can start running DRAM as a cache layer on your storage, but you'll actually run everything from 3D NAND flash.
I don't know if we've started a 2016 prediction sheet, but if we haven't, then that should be the first one that goes on. What is persistent memory going to be?
I think that's what it means. But of course, we'll find out later this month because she said we would. If that's true, then that makes HP potentially ahead of. Obviously, Cisco and Dell can go and buy Intel's technology. So Intel has the 3D XPoint, and then HP's got their own. But HP will have a massive cost advantage because they've developed them themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Okay, so they'll be able to keep an eye on
make good profits. So yeah. The rest of the HP announcement basically said there was also an interesting part about Aruba. So Meg Whitman said about Aruba after being asked by an analyst, she said, "Turning to Aruba and why it has helped our networking switch business, it's because the customers now believe that we're completely committed to the networking business. We are all in on networking, and while we had HP networking before, I think people thought, well, maybe they're not 100% committed, maybe a bit below scale. With the acquisition of Aruba, they've grown a great deal of confidence in our product roadmap and in our commitment to the business. And so Aruba, I think, has cast a really nice glow over the rest of our HP networking business." So that's the end of the quote, and that was Meg Whitman. So obviously she can actually spell networking, which is possibly the first time I've actually heard her say that. not always. But I do think that Aruba's got something here. I've done a couple of podcasts, and we are also just about to fly to Las Vegas next week. So as you're listening to the show, we are probably in Las Vegas recording shows with Aruba, so you'll be able to hear a bit about that. But I do certainly have the sense that Aruba is going to try and go straight for Cisco. They don't see themselves as being less than Cisco or smaller than Cisco. They see themselves going head-to-head competitive to Cisco. And it's a fair chance that they've got a good choice of it.
Interesting. Mm. All right. Well, there's prediction number two for the spreadsheet.
Okay.
All right. We've got them down. Well, that wraps it up for this week for Network Break. Thanks again to our sponsor, Interop. Remember, Interop is May 2nd through the 6th in Las Vegas, and we'll be there hosting the Future of Networking Summit. If you use the code PPushers when you register, you can get 25% off 5-day, 3-day, and 2-day conference passes. We do hope to see you there. In the meantime, Greg, where can folks find more from you?
People can find me on my blog at ethereumo.com and on the Twitters and LinkedIn. And I've also started fooling around with Facebook. I still haven't worked out how it works. I'm as confused as heck, but hey, I'm there.
All right, go visit him on Facebook. Make him feel better about being there. I'm Drew Conroy Murray. I blog at packetpushers.net. You can follow me on Twitter at Drew_CM. And thank you for joining us for this episode of Network Break. If you like the show, please give us a like on Facebook or leave a recommendation on iTunes or share the link with your colleagues. Please check out our newsletters, Human Infrastructure Magazine and Link Propagation, and you can find out about those at packetpushers.net. Thanks for listening.